We're looking at the end of Matthew 7, verses 13 to 29. And it's about knowing Christ. It's really what it means to know Him. And He lays it out for us in here. Again, following the theme of the chapter and the chapter before it, what does it mean to be good? And Jesus will deal with this many more times throughout the rest of the book of Matthew. What does it mean to be good? You know, I think to me that's what I stress more than anything else. I don't try to stress being righteous. I don't want to stress being good. And the reason I do that is something that we'll get to later. What does it mean to be good? And it's such a simple thing. To be good means to be like God. That's it. To be like God. And Jesus wants us to be good, and that's what He's driving at here in this whole chapter that we started last week. Throughout the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is laying the way for His kingdom. You've heard it said, or you've lived like this in your earthly Israelite kingdom, but in My kingdom it's like this. This is chapter 5. And you've heard it said, do this way, but I say do this way. You've lived this way before, but I'm calling you to a new kingdom with a new way to live. And in chapter 6, He talks about the goodness of God and how He provides for you and how you're to be forgiving like God. In chapter 7, He goes into the mercifulness of God. Again, the judgment of God. How do you want to be treated by God? So you should treat other people. And now He comes to this part. You ever watch a movie? The bad guy captures the good guy and he's going to torture him for information. And they say this. We can do this the easy way or the hard way. Right? We can do this the easy way or the hard way. Now, what does the hero always do? He always chooses the hard way. You know, the hero never just goes, all right, I don't want to be tortured. I like my body the way it is. The easy way usually has to do with giving into the demands of this evil person, right? The hard way is some torturous approach. It always involves pain and suffering. Now, you should see where I'm going with this. Jesus says, enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow, and the way is hard, that leads to life, and those who find it are few. We can do this, Jesus says. You can do this the easy way or the hard way. The easy way leads to death. The hard way leads to life. Not what you were expecting, huh? But the hard way, Jesus is laying that down. There's this wide gate with an easy road. How many people find destruction? I mean, if only a few find the narrow gate, many find the way to destruction. Many find it. It's the default setting. I mean, it's easy to find it. You don't even have to turn off the main road. The narrow gate. Picture it. Picture a wide gate and a narrow gate. The narrow gate, by its very nature, is restrictive. You can't take everything through it. It limits who will enter. And it limits the kind of life you will lead when you get there. The way of following Christ doesn't leave you with as many options, does it? The way of Christ, Jesus just laid down. The way of Christ is when you come through the narrow gate, you got one choice. You get to adopt My value system. But if you want the wide road, you can pick whatever value system you want. You see why that's the easy way? And you see why it's the way to destruction? You don't get to pick your own value system in the kingdom, but it leads to life. What does it mean to know God? Come on, relational terminology. What does it mean to know somebody? And I've covered this a lot over the last several years. What does it mean to know someone? To know someone, to truly know their heart, means to know their value system. That's what it means to know somebody. See, if you have an acquaintance, how much of their value system do you know? You don't know very much. You know what they put forward on the outside. You know what you might know what they want you to think about them, but you don't really know them. Now, the people that know you the most are the people who see you in the most settings. Usually it's your family. Your family has a pretty good idea what your value system is. They see you blow up and get angry with this. They see you sad about that. They see your emotions revealing your value system. They see what you value. They see how you spend your time. They see how you spend your money. They see what you eat. They see what you drink. They see what you don't. They see when you fast. They see when you pray. They see when you read your Bible. They see whatever it is you value or don't value, they see it. It's harder to hide that from our immediate families. Because, man, we're stuck living next to them all the time. They don't see all our values. There's a few that we still have and we hide them in our heart. God sees those. To know God is to really know what his value system is. And to know his value system, the only way to really know it is to take it upon yourself and live it. We have many sayings for that, right? You don't really know someone until you've walked a mile in his shoes or moccasins or whatever version you know, right? You don't know that. And you don't know God until you've tried to live his value system for a while. Once you start trying to live his value system, you get new windows and insights into who he really is. That's why what it means to come and follow Jesus, to be his disciple, to begin to experience his value system is a revelation of who he truly is in his heart that you don't know without trying it. The bottom line here is it's more difficult to be good and to have God's value system than to just live your own. It is. It's more difficult. Jesus says so. It can cost you more because it's sacrificial love. It can hurt you more because it's sacrificial love. A dedication to good doesn't make all your problems go away, and it doesn't make everything easy. Sometimes a dedication to good adds new problems to your life. It does. It's easier to do what pleases you and to avoid entering into the problems of others. Trust me, I know. Now, don't think I've forgotten that all sin in this life has consequences. It does. So even when you're on the wide road and living your own value system, it has problems that you generate because of that value system. I'm not discounting those. But what Jesus compels us to do is more than what the law said to avoid. See, well, this is the problem with legalism, too, is we get in the mind, this is what I'm not supposed to do. Okay, I'm not doing any of it. I must be fine. Jesus never lets us get away with that. He compels us to do more. We have to love our neighbors as ourselves. And man, I wish it didn't say love as ourselves at the end of that. But it does. We have to pursue the good of others. Now, don't jump to the wrong conclusion here. Even as God does what is good for you and not what you want and what makes you happy right now. We covered that with the snake and the stone last week. A good parent doesn't give in to every whim of his child. That defines goodness. Goodness isn't just getting everything you want from the parent. That doesn't make a good parent. Actually makes a pretty terrible parent. So when someone is in need, the answer of loving that person requires you to think. It means turning your brain on and saying, what can I do for this that's best for him or her in the long term? All right? So when we parent our kids, we don't say, what's the immediate thing this child needs? Well, sometimes the immediate thing needs is food. That's not what you were thinking, right? You were thinking something else. Sometimes the immediate thing this child needs is sleep. And sometimes this child needs discipline or whatever else. That was the one you were thinking of. So children need these things, and they don't always just need you to shower them with gifts. They need these other things that help them for the long term. It's what we call it, disciplining them. So they actually get disciplined themselves and learn to discipline themselves. So the greatest forms of love that we can give to people, the greatest form of love that we can give to people is getting them off the wide road and getting them onto the narrow road. That's the ultimate in loving somebody. The ultimate in loving somebody is getting them onto a different road, getting them to the different gate. And knowing that, most people don't want to switch gates, don't want to switch roads. Most of them are on the way to destruction and loving it. That's where they're going. That makes our job difficult, doesn't it? And that's why you can't help most people. You can't help them. You can't help everyone. You can't help somebody who doesn't want to be helped. You can make laws to do it in America. It's illegal to commit suicide. Okay, wait, it might be illegal, but, you know, is that going to stop people? It doesn't seem to work. See what I mean? You can't make a law to help somebody if they don't want to be helped. It doesn't work. So although we're called to be merciful to people, it's always toward the end of them becoming merciful people themselves. We talked about at the end of that last week. I'm probably jumping ahead for you because you weren't thinking about that all week. So when we give to others, it's for the end that they become people like us. So the solution sometimes to somebody's problem, if they're in need, isn't to just give them in the midst of their need, but to work with them to help them get out of the need. We have sayings for that in Proverbs for that, right? You teach a man to, if you give a man a fish, you fed him for a day. If you teach a man to fish, you fed him for a lifetime. We have Proverbs that go along with that. So sometimes the idea of what it means to be good to somebody, especially in the realm of spiritual things, is not just giving in to what you might think will make them happy or relieved for a moment, but to get them to the point where they in turn become sacrificial lovers. That's the goal. This is one of the things we teach when we teach parenting. When you teach your kids sacrificial love, you don't teach them sacrificial love by doing all the housework. And they know, Mom and Dad are so sacrificial. They do all the housework. Oh, they're amazing. One day, I will be like that. Yes, today will be the day. So you see, if you don't make them do housework, and some just go and do it on their own, it's unusual. It's amazing. So when you see someone take upon sacrificial love, you know that something's changed within the heart. Jesus wants us to make disciples. And he wants to make disciples. Do you know the people Jesus always uniformly refused? The people that just wanted handouts. He said, I'm not going to deliver for you. I'm not that kind of a king. I'm not the kind of king that's just going to feed you bread every day for free. Because I'm calling you to something that's difficult, sacrificial love. We'll get to those stories later on. Then Jesus says, measure teachers by their works. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. Wolves in sheep's clothing, right? Wolves in sheep's clothing. Sound dangerous? It's dangerous. The danger is very real. Jesus isn't exactly limiting who these are, whether they're false prophets or people within the Christian community that are going to come later on. He's just saying, generally, pay attention. There are dangerous people out there. They come looking like sheep, looking like you, but they're not. They are dangerous. Jesus says, good people bear good fruit. I love this. This is one of my most quoted sections of Jesus' teaching. Make the tree good and it'll produce good fruit. It's so simple. What a simple concept. You will recognize them. Now he's speaking of these false teachers. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes? Or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. That's a form of judgment, in case you missed it. Thus, you will recognize them by their fruits. Now, wait a minute, Jesus, didn't you start chapter 7 by saying, judge not, lest ye be judged? No, that'll get thrown out. Remember I said that's not what it was talking about? Okay, here's more proof if that's why it's not talking about that. We are told to judge people. You are told to judge teachers, those who come along saying this is what Jesus says, this is how you're supposed to live, by the fruit of their life. You're supposed to look at the fruit of their life. What is the fruit of the life? The good works that you do. Okay, you measure works. Good people bear good fruit. And whatever the life produces has its roots in the heart of the person. And as I've made a case in an entire sermon, the heart of a man can be described as your value system. Really, it can. A healthy value system like God's cannot produce bad fruit. A diseased one cannot produce good fruit. Fruit reveals if you're good and evil within your heart. False teachers help put you on the easy road. Hey, are they offering you an easy Christianity where you can be healthy, wealthy, problems go away? Guess what? They're liars. They're wolves. Because that's not what Jesus taught. Jesus is saying here, those particular kinds of people are also the ones that are showing that the fruit of their life is not sacrificial. It's not sacrificial to say, yeah, send in your millions of dollars this way. If most of the people are going down the wide road, where is it easier to pick up followers? On the wide road. And that's where you find these people picking up followers. They play to a bad, evil value system. Obviously, Jesus is not saying you can't judge these people. He's obviously saying judge them. Our judgment should be coupled with mercy. But if they deserve judgment, you need to do it. It's not casting your pearls before swine. Remember we talked about that last week? To not cast your pearls before swine is to give mercy and forgiveness to somebody who spits in your face over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. They don't understand the value system of God. You're not a doormat. I find it difficult to believe that false teachers do not know that they are false. I have a hard time believing that. There might be a few of them that are stupid, uneducated, deceived, but I would say the majority of them know full well exactly what they're doing. But that's not for me to worry about. I'm commanded by Christ to measure the fruit of their lives compared to sacrificial love. What is God's goodness? And when I look at their lives and the fruit of it, one that is self-indulgent, send me, make me rich, versus Christ's sacrificial love for the benefit of others, I see disease. That's how you measure it. It doesn't matter how good the words sound or how gifted or blessed they look. Their nature, because they're wolves, is to exploit the sheep and not care for them. God will reject evil doers. Now, Jesus and the rest of this is going to come down to your actions. And you've been trained and trained and trained and trained. And good evangelical theology says you're not saved by works. But don't miss what Jesus is saying here. You are not saved by works. But don't miss what Jesus is saying here. Your actions really are important. And Jesus stresses in the next sections here what you do. What you do. And he says here, God will reject evil doers. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. But the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Those are actions. And the other part, I never knew you, highlighted because it's relationship. What does it mean to know Christ? That's what this morning's sermon's all about. See, God rejects evil doers, no matter how good they look, how big their church is, how blessed they might be. These are not the things. Not how many miracles they did, how many demons they cast out, how many people faint when they wave their coat across the congregation. None of that counts to Jesus. Jesus says, look at the fruit of the lives. Does it correspond to his kingdom? Or are they busy building their own earthly kingdoms? So this is not a work salvation, but it's a salvation evidenced by works. You're transformed. The very same thing Paul says. On what basis does Jesus reject them? He rejects them because he says, I never knew you. That's the basis of the rejection. I don't know who you are. You claimed to know me. You pretended to know me. You did things that made everybody look, that made everybody think you knew me, but I didn't know you. Can you imagine Jesus saying that to somebody? I never knew you. Relationship based on common value system. If you don't act like Jesus, you don't know Jesus. If you don't act like him, you don't know him. If you don't act like Jesus, you don't know him. You know about him. You're trying to maybe copy him some of the time. You might be mouthing his words, but you don't know him. Because until you've walked a mile in his shoes, until you've adopted his value system, you don't know him. You don't know who he is. You don't know what drives his heart. It doesn't matter what signs or wonders or words or results you get. If your life doesn't look like Jesus, you don't really know him. Obedience to the Father's will is the basis for entering the kingdom on the day of judgment. Jesus says that right there. Isn't that amazing? Interesting, isn't it? Jesus says this. It's not words from me. People want no works necessary to the Christian life. They just want, I prayed this prayer and now I'm going to heaven. So now let me get back to the way I was living. I got bad news for you. You are still on the wrong road. And if you're teaching others that, you're a false teacher. You're a wolf. And in case you missed what I just discussed, and in case Jesus hears missed what was just, he says it again. You ready? Same thing. Everyone then, the then tying it together, who hears these words of mine and, say it with me, does them, will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. See, it's not enough to hear the words of Jesus. It doesn't count for anything just to hear them. The only difference between these two guys is one did something about it, and one didn't. One put into practice Jesus' teaching, and one didn't. They heard the same teaching. So the hearing has to be accompanied by action. Why? Because action proves faith. Proves that you believe it. Action proves that you've adopted a value system. There you go. That's the whole point. See, when your actions change, that means you've changed some of your values in one shape or another. Something changed. But if your actions don't change, your value system never changed. So Jesus said, I could pour all this teaching on you, but if nothing changes in your life, nothing went to the heart. You're the same thing you were when you came in. So unless you do what Jesus says, his words don't help you. And people like this, they're confused. They're saying, but I go to church and I hear this teaching and I know this stuff, but my life's no different. Can you imagine somebody? Yes, people do that all the time. But they've never changed. Because faith is required. Faith acts. Faith believes enough to do something. And as James says, faith without works is dead. I see Christians with major problems and issues in their relationships. They truly believe they're spiritual people. They believe in God. They pray to God to change things. They're convinced of miracles. They see signs and wonders and powers in their lives. But the real issues of life, in the most important relationships, they experience a house built on sand and not rock. Why is that? Because not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord. You see? That's not the measure of spirituality. We don't measure spirituality by things external to us, but what comes out of our heart. These people are trusting in faith. They're trusting in wonders. They're ignorant of truth. They're not taught to do evil. They're not evil people. They're just ignorant of what Jesus really taught them life was to be like. When Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. Why were they amazed? You know what was amazing about Jesus' teaching? You know what's different about Jesus and even us today? It's a simple thing. When Jesus taught stuff, he just presented, this is the truth, this is just the way it is. Jesus never had to start his sentences over and over. Well, the Bible says this. Moses said this. See, he didn't need to do that. Why did he not need to do that? Because he had his own authority to speak. He didn't need to borrow authority from some other source. The scribes did that. When they taught, they'd say, in Moses it says, or Rabbi so-and-so says this, or this is this other thing. They had no authority on their own. When Jesus speaks, he just says, you may have even read that in the Old Testament. Big deal. What I've got for you is this. That's authority. I mean, think about it. When Jesus says, you have heard it said, blah, and he says, but I tell you, what is he doing? He's saying, I have more authority than Moses. I have more authority than what you're reading there in the law. That's authority. Nobody had the guts to do that except for Jesus. What he said was just true. And he expect people to believe it and follow him. He laid down a new understanding for them. He pushes aside the old covenant and invites them to enter a new kingdom where he is the chief most authority, which we'll cover in the weeks ahead. I love it because I know what the whole book of Matthew's got in, and I know what's coming for you guys. It's going to be great going through this book again. Of course, in the movies, the hero chooses the hard way. That's what the hero always chooses. I'll go the hard way. And he suffers for it. For a while, you know, because it's a movie. He always wins in the end, right? You choose the hard way, you will suffer. You choose God's value system, you will sacrifice. In the end, you will be like Christ. You will gain victory over evil in your own heart. You'll be transformed. And you will find life. That's what Jesus promises. You going to be a hero? Who wants to be a hero? We're going to have communion now. The bread talks about our unity with one another. We eat from one loaf because we're one body. And it's a promise to one another in this community that if you take this bread, that you have to have sacrificial love for one another. Let's take it together. And of course, the model for that love we have for one another starts from God, Christ's love for us, the new covenant, his blood shed for us. The only reason we are one body is because of his body broken for us on the tree. Let's take it together.